You're listening to Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. Our guest is Dr. Denise Figg, first author of a September 15th study in The Lancet on the effectiveness of continuous glucose monitoring, or CGM, on maternal and neonatal outcomes in women with type 1 diabetes. Dr. Figg's group studied women both early in pregnancy, under 14 weeks, and those planning to become pregnant. They were randomized to either regular glucose monitoring with capillary blood or regular monitoring plus CGM. Dr. Figg is an associate professor of medicine at the University of Toronto, where she is head of the program on diabetes and endocrinology in pregnancy. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Dr. Figg.
Thank you.
I've described the general outline of your study, and I should have added that it was an international study of patients in North America and Europe. Could you describe generally what you found?
Certainly. We studied women with type 1 diabetes in pregnancy and found that the women who were randomized to continuous glucose monitoring had improved glycemic control as measured by a drop in hemoglobin A1C, as well as more time in the target range and less time above the target range.
Okay.
Their infants also had improved neonatal outcomes.
Okay. And the findings on the primary outcome that you set out to measure was the difference in glycated hemoglobin between, or HbA1c, between randomization and either late pregnancy or after 24 weeks randomization for those planning pregnancy. Were those findings, you describe them, I think, as small but significant. Were they unexpected, or were you expecting a greater difference?
We were expecting a greater difference in hemoglobin A1C. I think that our study and several studies previously have shown that hemoglobin A1C may not be the best predictor of glycemic control during pregnancy because of the changes in red blood cell turnover during pregnancy, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that time in target as measured by CGM may be a better indicator of what's actually going on.
Well, the neonatal outcomes weren't unexpected, were they? I mean, I think you point out that previous studies had found that CGM, or continuous glucose monitoring, had a salutary effect on neonatal outcomes in other studies. Is that right?
Well, actually, there have been only two previous studies using CGM in pregnancy. The first, which did find a reduced incidence of large for gestational age infants, used retrospective masked CGM, where the women couldn't look at the glucose levels in real time. They were blinded, and then they reviewed the glucose levels with their caregiver later.
Ah.
So the only other real-time CGM was in a study in Denmark where they did it they used intermittent CGM, and they did not find any differences in glycemic control or neonatal outcomes.
Okay.
And ours is the first continuous CGM study in pregnancy.
So the women were randomized either to, you know, measure glucose with capillary blood or to have capillary blood measurements. And I guess you encourage them to do seven of those a day. Those measurements plus CGM. Now, the women who were just doing capillary blood, they weren't wearing a dummy monitor, were they?
At baseline and at 24 weeks and 34 weeks during pregnancy, they wore a blinded CGM
okay.
so that we could compare their time and target to the women in the intervention group.
I see. So what you were measuring then, if you were measuring that, you were really measuring a sort of a complicated thing, which is to say that if the patient knows what her what her glucose level is she going to respond to that data, to that information?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And if she doesn't know and you say, look, you know, just do seven of these finger sticks a day, Is that going to be good enough? So I get it now. It wasn't clear. I'm sorry. I was. Is it fair to say that what was also new in your study was your ability to measure how much time on average the developing fetuses were exposed to hyperglycemia, or how much time spent in the target glucose range? The previous studies hadn't, I think you just pointed out, hadn't studied that, had they?
Well, there have been a couple observational studies measuring some women with type 1 diabetes, but they showed that in those older just observational studies, women spent only about 50% of the time in target, and our intervention study showed that they were able to spend 68% of the time in target compared to the control group that spent 61% of the time in target.
And that was a significant difference?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
I was just going to say they spent 100 more minutes a day in target.
And therefore, the neonatal outcomes, so let's review those. There were fewer babies that were large, that had macrosomia, right?
That's right.
In the people with continuous monitoring. And there were fewer admissions among that group for neonatal ICU lasting more than 24 hours.
That's right.
Okay. And so those were findings that as you say later in the paper, and as you mentioned earlier in this conversation, those numbers, the numbers of time spent in the hyperglycemic state or the time spent in the target range might be more relevant for outcomes than what the mother's glycated hemoglobin level is.
Right. I think hemoglobin A1C is probably a rough estimate of what's going on, but it seems that time in target may be a more sophisticated indicator of, yes, what the baby sees,
mm-hmm.
and seems to have made an incredibly large effect on the complication rate.
You offer some numbers needed to treat prevent, an admission to the neonatal ICU, and there was another one that was.
Yes.
You were preventing.
So,
go ahead.
You need to treat only 6 women to prevent 1 large for gestational age infant,
mm-hmm.
and 1 neonatal intensive care unit admission over 24 hours, and 8 women to prevent neonatal hypoglycemia.
And that's pretty impressive, except
yes.
How expensive is it to do that monitoring, Dr. Fake?
Right. So there certainly is a cost involved. It costs about $1,500 to $1,800 per pregnancy.
Okay.
But we are planning a cost-benefit analysis.
Uh-huh.
But it may just be that the admission to the NICU, which, as you know, can be extremely expensive,
yeah.
May just offset these extra costs of CGM.
Yeah. So let's do some back of the envelope numbers here. So if you say let's round it up to $2,000 a pregnancy for CGM, and you needed to treat say ten people, even though that's way over what you found. To prevent 1 admission, so that would be 10 times 2,000 would be $20,000. It would cost you to prevent that neonatal ICU admission, and it would, which as you said is probably more expensive. Than $20,000. I'm just guessing. So okay, so you think that CGM should be offered to all pregnant diabetic women with type 1 disease? Then,
yes, I think given the benefits that on glycemic control and neonatal complications, it certainly looks beneficial, and I certainly would recommend offering it to all women with type 1 diabetes and pregnancy.
Huh. So until you do the cost-benefit analysis, what do you hope will happen, say, next week with pregnant women and with type 1 diabetes? Do you hope your paper will change any practice immediately?
I'm hoping that bodies that make recommendations for the care of these women will look at our paper carefully and consider recommending CGM to their patients. And by changing recommendations, this may also change insurance plans that will cover the costs.
I guess it's worth pointing out that something like 80% of the patients on CGM complained about, they had some complaints about it. What were those complaints?
Well, most of them were, some skin reactions. Some people didn't like the alarm. Mm-hmm. The sensors were finicky. But to be honest, we didn't actually use the most up-to-date CGMs, and they are getting better and better.
Uh-huh.
So I think these problems will go down. And for the most part, women's satisfaction of their treatment was quite good.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for spending time with us today, Dr. Fake.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure.
That was our 213th edition. All earlier conversations may be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from NEJM Journal Watch. Kristen Kelly is the executive producer here for the NEJM Group. I'm Joe Elia. Thank you for listening.